The PT Pintcast is powered by International Service Learning. For over 22 years, International Service Learning has been leading volunteers to 12 different countries to provide physical therapy services for those in need. They believe in the power of the individual that chooses to serve and make a difference in the lives of others. They have opportunities in Costa Rica, Belize, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and many more locations around the globe. For more information about volunteering, visit islonline.org.
Hey PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Today on the show, he's a DPT, board certified OCS and CSCS. He started his own performance clinic in 2014 to provide a higher level of sports performance and fitness coaching in the greater Richmond, Virginia area. Got his Bachelor of Science in Human Nutrition, Food and Exercise from Virginia Tech. He's a Hokie. And his DPT from VCU, also a Ram. He believes in the continuum between fitness and injury rehab is only as good as the professional's knowledge of both realms. He has had the opportunity to apply these principles in working with youth, college, and professional athletes, as well as the public at large, to increase his patients' level of fitness and quality of life. On the PT Pintcast right now, we welcome Kyle Adams. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
All right. First question is always the hardest. What are we drinking tonight?
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it local, semi-local here to Richmond, Virginia. I've got Bold Rock Virginia Draft.
I like that a lot. See, yep. I like a lot of the guests are starting to pick up because they're listening to the show first, and then they'll hear what other people are drinking. And I like the fact that I'm getting exposed to all these different beers and hearing about them. Out of Glens Falls, New York, I got like a sampler pack. The brewery is called Davidson Brothers, and they've got a bunch of different beers I've tried on episodes. I'm doing their IPA tonight. So cheers to you, and thanks for coming on the show.
It's all cool.
All right. Now that the hard questions are out of the way and we've had our first sip, started following you on Twitter a couple months ago, and I think the discussion either came up by you or we had kind of jumped into it together. Physical therapy students' lack of knowledge regarding exercise. I feel like this is, I hate to use the E word, but epidemic.
Yep. Definitely an epidemic. So it was something that I definitely noticed in PT school, you know, at VCU. So I kind of got into strength and conditioning. You know, I was always a gym guy once I kind of hung it up soccer wise, you know, in high school, didn't end up playing in college, and the gym life kind of took over. But really when I got in PT school was when I started to learn a lot, read a lot, started actually following a podcast, the Fitcast, which is where I became familiar. Yeah. So Tony Gentilcore, he just had Eric Cressy. Those guys have been, you know, heavily influential in me. So in PT school, definitely got into that on my own, got my CSCS after my first year and started to kind of play around with that concept, but it definitely did not match what we were learning from the orthopedic exercise prescription portion of class, which pretty routinely is shockingly absent from most programs, or at least it's a very small portion of the, you know, different PT school programs out there. So I think that definitely needs to change.
Yeah, we talked to Shirley Sarman not long ago in an episode, and she brought up the reason why, because I couldn't figure out the reason why. I mean, I've only been in PT school for 2.5 years, so where did it kind of fall out? And she thought it had to do with billing and how things were billed, that we went away from exercise because it was billed the lowest.
Sure. Yeah. So I definitely listened to that. That was an awesome episode. And that's an interesting perspective. I think it's, I don't know if it was necessarily billing. I think even in my early days of PT school, so some of my mentors who actually, so Andrew Rothschild was kind of who I looked up to. That's kind of my main mentor there. And I think even he probably in his early days really had gotten heavily into manual therapy. And certainly some medical exercise stuff was a component, but it really wasn't the focus. Making that magical quick change with manual therapy was really really the hot topic, and I think we got lost there for a while. I don't know that we were ever good per se, but I think we definitely got lost. And now you're seeing, whether it's the rise of social media and folks getting into fitness just since it's a cool area, there's a lot of information. I just don't know if a lot of it is quality out there. So hopefully we can take that evidence-based approach that we do clinically, manual therapy-wise, hopefully, but apply that in the strength and conditioning world, certainly, and finding people to learn from that actually understand those principles, as opposed to us just saying, oh, hey, you know, I got a doctorate, pat myself on the shoulder, I must certainly know a lot about exercise, when frankly, that's almost never the case. So for me, it was all about learning outside of the classroom, reading blogs continuously, buying books. I mean, Maximum Strength was huge for me, or Cressy's old book, some of Chad Waterbury's stuff was big for me, and getting in the gym, learn how to pull heavy from the floor, learn how to squat properly, learn how to hip hinge properly, and frankly, if you can't do it, how can you expect a patient to do it? So we've got to be fitness leaders, practice what we preach, and then hopefully find a way to include that in the curriculum at a very high level that sets us apart from just the personal training and or strength coaches out there.
Yeah, are there any programs out there that are doing it better than others? We get great foundational knowledge where I went to school. I know a bunch of students from VCU, great foundational knowledge. Are there any other programs that are doing it differently?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if it was somebody on your show recently, but it kind of made me think. A lot of those newer schools out there that I think are probably hiring younger faculty and really trying to approach things with a bit of a fresh approach. I've taken a couple Lynchburg students that are very interested in exercise. They kind of have a tie to a guy, Don Reagan, that I kind of follow socially, who's a big FMS guy down out of, you know, Greg Cook's clinics. And they get some great stuff from him. So I think they do a nice job. I had a student actually from Texas Women's University who was one of my first students. Great manual therapy program, but also a fantastic exercise program. And it seems like the blocks of learning from an exercise standpoint were much larger in the curriculum than what we got, at least for me at VCU, which is very strong evidence program, great orthopedic staff, but probably not super strong when it comes to exercise and the continuum leading all the way out of rehab and into fitness, certainly.
Yeah, you brought up Texas Women's. That's actually my advisor and our chair of the Marymount DPT program. That's where she went to PT school, and they were actually featured as our PT school of the week a couple of weeks ago. So if we're not getting it necessarily in school, now you obviously sought out getting your CS. Is that after graduation or during school? Or
I did it. I did it after I finished my first year. So good buddy Justin of mine that I graduated PT school with, we happened to be very like-minded, ended up living together. Both of us got it, took the test on the same day, and we've been running with that ever since. And he kind of practices very similar to me. So yeah, the first year out of school, and I've had it ever since. And outside of that, it's all really been learning on my own.
Any other good exercise-based con ed classes besides? I mean, obviously the FMS and the SFMA usually come up often. Anything else that we're missing?
Yeah, you know, something that I actually haven't taken that I'm looking to take next year is some of Dr. Smita's programs there with some of the functional range release from a manual therapy standpoint and functional range conditioning. I think a lot of those principles that he seems to be applying in terms of how to actually create tissue resiliency, remodeling through proper fitness and mobility is pretty interesting stuff. I'm certainly looking at, you know, Kelly Starrett with some of the stuff that he does, obviously more mobility focused in the grand scheme of things. And then really, I can't overstate enough, really got to find the good strength and conditioning guys out there. So if you're just not following the basics of Mike Boyle, Eric Cressy, Mike Robertson, and the guys at IFAST, Bill Hartman just put out a new product to kind of learn from them as well. Those are my top sources out there for sure. High performance handbooks, kind of Eric Cressy's most recent. Got to get them all, got to read them, try them out yourself and incorporate what you like, lose what you don't like.
It is a double-edged sword because there can be so much information out there, but if you seek out the guys who've been doing it for a while, and I hate to say it like a popularity contest, but you know, you look at a guy like Eric Cressy or Tony Gentilcore or Dan John, you know, there's a reason they have like 30,000 followers. It's because what they're putting out there is has been tested and tried and true, and it's been shown to work. So those are kind of good guys to, you know, grab a book. I mean, just because you're not a student anymore doesn't mean you shouldn't grab one of those books.
Absolutely, and learn the fundamentals. All those guys, if you look at their programs, you know, they're not having guys doing backwards handstand dumbbell curls on a Bosu ball. They're properly coaching the fundamental strength movements. They're thinking about how that is going to impact patient and or client's physiology, right, and response. And then they marry both of them, and they don't necessarily overthink the training itself, but they go way beyond the average when it comes to why they're doing what they're doing from a fitness perspective, which is what we have to do to match great outcomes with our manual therapy outcomes.
Well said. Now, areas where we got to improve as PTs to be seen, as this is the direction that the field wants to go in, is seen as movement experts, as sports medicine experts. Where do we have to go besides just getting better at exercise?
It's challenging because it's very interesting that when we start to look at our referral sources, if you have simple conversations with your referral sources, especially surgical referral sources, and even worse, I hate to say it, primary care providers, their level of understanding of what we're doing is not good, right? So if I talk about something that probably matches one of these kind of newer guys out there, right, and I've got my patients swinging kettlebells and doing kettlebell arm bars, not to get overly complicated with the kettlebell, but even just basic strength and conditioning movements, that sounds almost crazy to them, but it's certainly doing much more than 8,000 TheraBand reps, which probably be, you know, better than three sets of 10, but that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, educating referral sources as to why you do what you do and how what you do is better than other folks in town is definitely important, I think, first of all. And second, we really have got to look at external sources who are willing to come into the clinic to get treated with your fitness program and PT expertise. So whether it's finding trainer referral sources, massage therapists, speaking anywhere you can, you've got to sell the value of your service and have the general public become familiar with why you do what you do and how that is going to be better than other providers around the area. And hopefully the cream will rise to the top, and that through our newer performance-based systems, sort of the rest will fall off. You either learn or die. That's at least what I hope for.
Well said. I read one of your recent blog posts, and it was pretty much all about where you think we're going to go as physical therapists, and you were outlining it. As I read it, it kind of felt like you wrote it as a multi-blog series, and that the first one was just up last month. And you just kind of wanted to outline where you think our opportunities are within health and fitness, and you brought up one of those, which is getting out there and educating the people who either refer to us or you're going to speak to potential patients.
It's finding the avenues where you're going to have an active, motivated client base that's going to buy what you're selling there. And certainly what you're selling needs to be ethical. It needs to be honest. You need to practice what you preach, and that should be the end of it there. So I think as long as we're moving into that direction, you're probably going to see a bit of a, you know, I'm kind of a golf guy there. So in the golf world, the rules, bifurcated rules, I think we're going to kind of see that same thing apply to us in the PT world. So, you know, what the pros do is not different from the amateurs in golf. And I think for us, you're going to see a bifurcation of how we perform as outpatient providers, period. You're going to see large conglomerate groups that just bang out 30 patients a day, and then you're going to see forward-thinking, hopefully better, I like to think at least, private practice providers that probably operate more as a consultant, almost a concierge PT / fitness model, which you're certainly seeing with guys like Mike Reinold up at Champion. You're certainly seeing with Kelly Starrett and what he's done out at San Francisco. And I think more and more it's going to be, hey, I've got a great skill set. I think I'm an expert at exercise, right? So how can I find more people that are willing to buy into that unique skill set and are willing to pay me for it and pay me well, right? So learn all the time, be better, but get paid for it too. And I think that's both ethical and makes great business sense. And hopefully we can continue to marry those in a way that the public finds attractive.
And that's only going to help the field, because the more good people, like you said, and I agree with you right there, the more good people out there, the better the field is going to be, and the easier it'll be to convince people what we actually do, which is sometimes more than half the battle.
100%. Fantastic point. Completely.
You can check out Kyle's blog online at his website, which is Adams Performance RVA, and you can follow him on Twitter as well, which is Kyle Adams RVA. And I'm about to go out to my second full-time rotation. It's going to be in an orthopedic setting. So you wanted to talk a little bit about how to incorporate strength and conditioning properly into a rehab program.
I think that can be tricky, and that is often where my students probably struggle the most, because
That's where I do my first one. Yeah, definitely.
So you get a guy like, you know, he's day two ACL, and you're thinking like, man,
don't hurt him.
don't hurt him. And you're also thinking like, God, I don't want to be the guy that he judges for doing a straight leg raise and a quad set. Like, he's going to think I'm lame. I read his stuff online. So I think you've got to find the balance there, right? So number one, yeah, don't hurt him. It's probably a good idea. Number two is understand that in the acute phases of injury, which I think we do a bad job of as PTs, look, we've got to control swelling, inflammation, pain, because that will naturally be inhibitive to the central nervous system. But once you get out of that phase, you can start to think about tissue healing. And then when you hit that magical third phase, you really start to think about how do we develop fitness. So I'm a big fan of Charlie Weingroff, and a lot of stuff that he does kind of talks about how to build tissue resiliency at a certain point. So that's where strength and conditioning comes in. So as an example for me, let's say I get an ACL who's 8 weeks out, graft is doing pretty good, his quad looks good, and he's nice and stable. We know we want to develop some hamstring strength, some glute strength, but we want to do it in a, I hate to use the word functional way, but let's go with it. So maybe instead of doing like stool crawls with the hamstrings, which are ridiculous, maybe we think about doing a cable pull through, right? So maybe that teaches a proper hip hinge pattern. It is not highly loading on the knees, and we can really develop some hip speed with that. And then we can kind of parlay that into kettlebell swings, single arm kettlebell swings, deadlifting progressions. And then you can just go on and on from there, throw them on an AirX pad, get some reactive neuromuscular stuff going on. And then we can cue good position through fitness choices. And I think that's where maybe in the ACL example, hopefully that fits. And I think a lot of the newer forward-thinking surgeons would say, yeah, I mean, clearly we know that the hips are important when it comes to prevention, right? So hopefully the hips are important when it comes to rehab, just like, hey, ACL prevention protocols really just look like good training. Looks right. Like good quality, smart training. So I think that the bottom line is we need to put in good quality training for the client or patient at the appropriate time, and then teach them or give them a program and have them pay you for it if it's good, in terms of in the future as they leave the clinic, so that you give them the skills to be successful without having to rely on you in the future, hopefully.
And then they had a great physical therapy experience that's only going to make things easier the next time they're thinking of, I'm either feeling like I'm going to get injured or now I am injured, and they're going to come back to you.
No doubt. And they feel confident in the skills that you have given them. So worst case, if somebody can't train with me, you know, moves or doesn't have the time, at least I've given them the tools to attack the gym. And the same thing applies to my patients as well.
And that's what we want. We want them to be able to do it without us. We want to educate as much as we are walking them through it.
You would like to think so.
Yeah, we would. I know.
Yeah. But I think we're moving that direction.
So can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
No doubt.
I want to bring up a sponsor that's actually in your backyard, the Richmond Endurance Athlete Symposium and Expo. This is a cool event. I'm going to get down there too. It's January 23rd at the Westin in Richmond. This is their third year. They've got a bunch of orthopedic doctors. They've got a bunch of physical therapists, strength and conditioning guys for endurance athletes. I'm a little bit of a triathlon geek, and they've got Matt Lieto, who's been an Ironman commentator and competitor, and they've got Lindsay Corbin, who's just a five-time Ironman champion. She just won a couple of those Ironmen. So they're going to be down there talking. You can check out more information online at richmondendurancesymposium.com. I'm pumped for stuff like that. I like to see that, because there are MDs and there are PTs and there's strength and conditioning guys all coming together for one reason, and that's that specific type of athlete.
Amazing. Perfect. You know, it doesn't happen enough.
Yeah, excited for that. So, all right, I want to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk about tests, retests. We actually did an episode just on this with one of my friends and why it's so important in return to play and fitness. And then I want to get into your specific model. You've got something kind of cool, kind of different in terms of how you modeled your clinic. And I want to talk about how soon after PT school should someone or could someone be thinking about that. So we'll be back in 60 seconds with Kyle Adams on the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
We gotta go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
The PT Pinecast is powered by PTLive.me. PT Live wants you to know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
Humanity's greatest advances are not in its discoveries, but in how those discoveries are applied to reduce inequity.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive.
We all need to contribute.
Me, you, we. It is our duty.
With international service learning, travel to a new part of the world. Learn the skills to help others and serve those in need. Visit ISLonline.org for more.
Cracking your back. And a cold one. The PT Pinecast with McKay. And we're back.
All right, we're back in the PT Pintcast. We are here with Kyle Adams. You can check him out online. Website with a cool blog is AdamsPerformanceRVA.com, and you can check him out on Twitter as well. His handle is KyleAdamsRVA. And we wanted to talk a little bit about why test and retesting athletes in the main lifts is important for either return to play or just overall fitness. We had talked about this with a friend of mine in a previous episode, John DeNoyles. Test, retest, and why it's so important and why it's so easy to not do that. But why is it important for you, Kyle?
So it's kind of twofold. So we're always testing, retesting, at least hopefully we are, when it comes to a manual therapy technique, right? Check range, thrust manipulate, stick some needles in, whatever. Retest, have we made a positive change? Patient sees it. Anybody that practices manual therapy knows that's when patients look at you like, oh, that, you know, as the running joke in kind of my residency program, I actually feel better. So we need to apply the same thing, certainly, when it comes to exercise. So when you're testing athletes, it certainly depends on what that athlete's status currently is, if they're injured or not, right? So, I mean, some things are just contraindicated. Right. If you can't squat, you can't squat. But when a kid comes in and tells me that his back hurts and he's squatting 325 and can't bodyweight squat without being on his toes and his knees touching, I probably don't want to see what he looks like with 325 on his back. So shocker that he has back pain. Maybe it's because he has zero mobility, like at his ankle, no hip control, or thoracic spine mobility. Maybe we should attack those up and downstream, and the back pain typically resolves itself pretty quickly. So it's twofold there, because the first test both gives you objective information to then guide either your other special test, or also gives you a means to attack a certain movement pattern that's going to be important to that athlete, whether that's just getting stronger or if it does happen to be specific to the sport. So first of all, it shows your athletes where they may be weak, which you don't want to do too much of, right? So I take a mental note, right? The kid looks terrible with his squat there, just body weight. We'll get to that later. I don't want to make too much of a point of that at the same time, right? So you don't want to make your patient feel like a failure just to sell the fact that you can make them feel like a winner, certainly. But it also gives you baseline data, because how do I know if that kid goes back and squats 325, whether I've made any improvement at all, if I can't see it, if I can't see what he looks like body weight before and after, and what he tells me in terms of, oh, hey, I hit the weight room, warmed up, felt good, and you know what? I knocked out 5 reps at 225, and I can definitely tell form is completely different and I look completely different. So your athletes will tell you that when they come back to you from the finish of treatment, but they can also say like, you know what, man, I can't believe what I look like when I first came in the clinic. Now that I think about it, no wonder I keep getting hurt. I feel a little better. I keep getting hurt until I came to see you. Now I realize that I just need to take a step back and usually attack things the right way. So I think the last thing about that is not only do they see the huge change in how they move objectively, but also how they feel in realizing that, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. I should probably listen to him with like other stuff in the future to really maximize my potential. So it's a great way to sell your service when it comes to the fitness side of things. Your client is coming in at first just to be treated for pain or from a performance standpoint. Either way, if you can test, retest, show them clearly where they were, you know, you've probably got a person for life.
Right. That's a good walkthrough of what's in your head, because that's kind of what I do while I'm in clinic or I'm shadowing somebody, is I really do. And it's hard because time is of the essence and you've got to see a patient. But I do like to hear the what and the why at the same time. But I realize in front of a patient, it's kind of difficult.
Absolutely. And that's tough for a lot of students. So just, and you know, for any of the students listening, just understand that recognizing the need to test first is the first step.
Right.
You're not just throwing somebody to the wind, you know, immediately, and then thinking, you know, my question to my students always, oh, how do you know that was any better? Oh, God. You know, and they look at me with, you know, deer in the headlights look like, man, I never even tested that. I never even asked that. So how do you know they're better? I probably don't. So anyways, that's just one thing to think about for everybody out there.
Well, it's good to hear that at least once so you don't go and make that mistake again. You know, yeah. I tell the story all the time. We used to use these things in radio called CDs. Kids don't even know what they are anymore because we use MP3s. Yeah. And you typically in a radio studio would have three CD players going at any one time, two queued up and one playing. And I always tell people, you're going to pop out the one that's playing one time in your radio career. And you're going to have that gut feeling every time you reach to pop it out again, and you're never going to do it again. So I imagine if your CI turns to you and says, well, are they better? And you said, well, yeah. Well, how do you know if you haven't tested them the first time? You're never going to do that one again.
That's it. And you're going to develop a very good clinical practice pattern. Right. You're going to get this, you know, the same person in 1 week later, and you're going to kill it, and you're going to feel great.
Yeah, so you won't forget.
Don't worry if you miss it the first time. Just don't miss it the second.
That makes me feel a little bit better because I'm less a memorization kind of guy, and I'm more a routine and a reps kind of guy where I've got to do it a couple times, and I feel better that way.
Sure. And we don't want to see, getting off topic a bit, but as CIs, we don't want to see you be perfect the first time. We want to see you recognize what you did wrong and be open to developing that practice pattern. So don't worry when you miss something. Just get on it the second time and then kill it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, let's get into your model of your clinic. You kind of explain it a little bit on your blog, and you're set up inside of a gym. Is it a martial arts studio as well?
It is, yeah. So I made that transition. I was in a CrossFit facility, which was great for a while there, and you know, things kind of changed there, so I went ahead and moved in. It's a fantastic strength and conditioning facility in the front half of the building, and in the back they have a nice mixed martial arts area where they do some jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai stuff, and kind of fill in the gaps with some fun stuff otherwise. So I'm kind of in a weird spot. I'm a clinic director. I run a traditional outpatient orthopedic clinic full-time, and then I fill in all of my other hours with my own business within a gym. So I contract for space. I pay a hourly or session-based rental fee, essentially, and have pretty free rein outside of that. So I'm in a nice business setup where I have little overhead, or at least fixed overhead, which can be important. And then I can apply my model from there when it comes to fitness. So the way it works for me, if you're coming in off of the street, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a mom with some friends that wants to get more fit, doesn't matter. You're going to get a pretty clinical, thorough assessment that's typically SFMA, FMS based at least, right? If we've got any issues we need to work around, that's fine. We'll come up with the program. And then after that, we start to hit it in the gym a few days a week, whatever you want. So from a assessment straight on to programming side of things, you can either get the individualized coaching or also we can meet, we can see how you move, and then we can come up with a little mobility program and certainly a full month-long strength and conditioning program that you could also do at a gym that you're currently working out with as well. And in that role, I kind of serve more as a strength coach consultant. So trying to have as many roads in the revenue stream as I can, but still make sure I'm providing a specific high quality product kind of within that. And I guess the last thing is I do also offer the gym members where I train at free assessments. So I mean, I've been over there for three, 4 months now, and I've probably seen at least 10 people, you know, fighters, executives. Not only do you just meet, you know, great people and kind of develop connections early on, but you can also kind of have everybody in the gym talking about you because you provide a nice product there too. And hey, like last Thursday when I left the gym, we got a college wrestler in who's going to have some stuff done and needs to see a PT for 3 weeks. So, you know, I'll get an ACL in the clinic for 3 weeks before he heads back on to school. So yeah. But it's a nice referral source as well sometimes.
Yeah, it's also probably better for the perception of PT because you're not some guy in a clinic by himself. And again, I mean, the Alpine athlete, Brian Finch brought this up too, step away from that yellow TheraBand. It puts a PT kind of, in my mind, where we should be, which is around heavy things.
Absolutely. And shocker, people who are athletic and fit enjoy being assessed in an environment where they can be athletic and fit, right? Mm-hmm. So it helps them feel comfortable. And an important note on that is people will see you. So I could go and talk to that group of, let's say, 50 members, right? Or I can be in the gym. They can see me deadlifting and doing other assessments and training my clients. So they get a very visual, real representation of what I can do. And then they feel comfortable coming up and talking to me. And then I see them around, hey man, how's that hip doing? Oh, it's awesome. Thanks for seeing me last week. I didn't have to go to a PT. you and spend a ton of money, it was a 5-minute fix. So people love that too.
PT right in front of them. You can't really pay to have that kind of exposure. So it's a good positioning statement. It's a good positioning move for PTs. And I'm hearing more and more about this type of model. I think it's brilliant.
You see guys like Urson Religioso, you know, he does some of that stuff too with UpDoc and all those guys. And I think Mike Reinold there for a while was kind of applying that model before he opened Champion. So hopefully, maybe I'll be as smart as those guys someday and operate on some level of awesomeness that they do. So yeah, we'll see.
Sounds good. Well, how long after school did you decide that I want to do this thing? I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a business owner and a PT at the same time, because this is a hot topic, comes up a lot amongst PT students and fresh PTs.
Definitely. And it's a good one. I know Ben Fung's been doing some stuff that I've seen. I haven't listened to any of that yet, but I know that's kind of a hot topic on Twitter. You know, and I don't know. I think that depends on the individual and your prior exposure or experience. Certainly, I think that probably for most people, they need to get out, find a mentor, or do a residency program, have a very high quality skill set, which I think can be accomplished within a year, learning from somebody really intelligent. I did some stuff up at UVA with Vomti and Eric Magrum up there, and that worked out great. But I think you need to have a very good clinical skill set first is your base. If you have the exercise and fitness experience, that can also be great. But I think that you probably need to practice, see volume of patients, and apply those principles first before you start selling yourself, because you've got to be pretty good with the words to convince somebody who's going to pay you, frankly, a premium to treat them very quickly right out of school. And that's very important, because when you start to charge a premium, which I kind of do, you better deliver a result quickly or they're going to go elsewhere, as they should. So it gets a little tricky. I will say for me, it probably took a couple years. I knew that's what I always wanted to do, but I wanted to kind of put my head down, really work hard, read all the time, learn as much as I could, and just kind of wait. So hopefully I was smart in that regard to understand that I needed to develop that kind of expertise. A couple years, I don't know about expertise, but certainly having a very clear direction and be able to deliver a fast result to people. So I think for most people coming out of school, put your head down for a year, work around a good, smart person and learn, and very quickly start to develop contacts in your area. Try to think about what kind of a niche interests you and or would serve the community well if you're going to stay in the area, and then work as hard as you possibly can to find that and develop that rapidly. Because once you develop that and get going, as long as the product is good, things will typically start to snowball pretty quickly and you can be successful and really have a nice control of your career long term.
Yeah, I've heard people say, feel comfortable flying without a net for a while, because you're not in that clinic. There's no one next to you. Maybe if you're going out on your own, you're not going to have someone. You better be pretty comfortable flying without a net, because as you said, you're charging a premium. You're saying, I'm the man. And they come to you. And if you're not 100% comfortable, you're doing them a disservice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're probably guilty of that, coming right out of school thinking like, man, I'm on Twitter all the time. I'm reading articles. I'm feeling good. And then you get, you know, that patient that's somewhat complicated in front of you, and you're looking at your CI like, I don't know where to go next. Well, thanks for taking that person's $100 to see you for 30 minutes. They appreciate the fact that you completely blew it, right? And they're never coming back. So that can be a tough spot to work your way out of, especially if you want to do kind of what I do. You're going to have to focus on a more executive, probably well-off clientele, because they can pay you, right? And they're going to be actively interested in seeking your services. So you better be prepared to provide that quality product very quickly to them, to make them understand what you're doing and have that buy-in. So it's a fine line to walk there. I think you'll know when you're ready, and you'll know when you are delivering very good outcomes to your patients pretty quickly and consistently, and you'll know when the time is right.
Sounds good to me. All right. Every episode is a pint. And before we are done with the pint, we do some shots, the parting shots. So you've taken students, you've seen people develop, you've developed as a clinic owner and an entrepreneur. Any parting shots for someone who's thinking about following in your footsteps, something similar?
You know, I think the biggest thing is take your time coming out of school, develop a very realistic game plan in terms of where you are headed professionally and how you want to get there, and understand that I was just reading, I think it was on Tony Gentilcore's blog actually today, and his business partner Pete, you've got to put your head down, you've got to put the time in, you've got to read. If your blog has 4 followers, then get 10 in 6 months and try to shoot for 1,000 eventually. But no one's going to do it for you. Mm-hmm. You've got to just jump in, get after it, like you've done with this Pintcast and podcast, which is fantastic, right? But now you're starting to get to meet a ton of great people out there, right? And you're very quickly kind of getting off on the right foot. And I think students coming out of school need to understand that as well. People will pay you for your expertise, but it comes with time. And instead of going out and grabbing beers 3 days a week, once you've got a little cash coming out of school, you probably need to go home, hop on Twitter, read some articles, read some publications, read some books, and continue to develop professionally to put yourself ahead of others, and then people will pay you for it.
I like that. I like that advice a lot. You can find out more about Kyle Adams on his website, including his blog, Adams Performance RVA, and on Twitter, which is a great place to just catch people like Tony Gentilcore or Eric Cressy or K-Star and just find out what they're reading, what they're thinking about. Find Kyle on Twitter. His handle is at Kyle Adams RVA. Appreciate this, because a lot of the things you were saying, I was kind of nodding my head when I was on Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, I want to talk to this guy, because we're kind of similar mindset in terms of exercise as well.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Appreciate you coming on the show. I hope this isn't the last time we talk, man.
No doubt. Let's do it again.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.